You're listening to SBS News.
I think that there's a, you know, for the people on the forefront of climate change, for local communities and the civil society organisations that work with them, there's a huge disconnect between what's happening to them. They're seeing their beaches and islands go under in the Pacific. They're seeing the very existence of their countries, of their nations threatened. Between that and a lot of the big lobbying players who come and descend on the COP discussions and try to influence it. So it's absolutely essential that civil society from the Pacific, from Australia, from the rest of the world is there putting up a big fight and having their voices heard so that we're not drowned out and that that urgency is really understood.
Some reporting already revealed documentation. The host country wants it to focus on discussions on oil and using that as a platform for that. I mean, what's your reaction to hearing that that's still very much a concern, the lobbying and, you know, whether we're on a trajectory to phase out fossil fuels or whether we're still very much with it?
It's deeply concerning that anyone would be using the climate change conference as a way of speeding up or expanding fossil fuel markets. Really, the civil society organisations, Caritas, Pacific Civil Society, are all there to make sure that people understand the urgency of what's happening at COP and take action around it.
What will be, you know, hallmarks of success from your point of view?
Well, we really want to see action on the new loss and damage fund. So we're hoping that there's going to be that the model that's been agreed to will be implemented with improvements. We need to make sure that not only is a loss and damage fund announced, but that there is sufficient scale that to ensure that it's effective and that it's really delivering for the people at the front lines of climate change. We also need to make sure that it includes non-economic loss and damage. And our new report on non-economic loss and damage from Caritas shows how important that is, especially for the most vulnerable and developing countries around the world.
And if you could give me some insight as well, did you also do as part of that report or separate work some surveying on the attitudes of Australians when it comes to understanding, you know, this economic loss and damage? And what did that reveal?
Absolutely. Australians really saw that, yes, they understood the importance of the economic damage that happens from climate change as, you know, crops or industries are affected and that money-making facility, you know, is reduced. But what really hit home for Australians was the non-economic form. So when wildfires break out, when people's homes are destroyed, when they have to move, the emotional, the things that change people's lives from climate change are really those non-economic forms. And in the Pacific, that's absolutely true as well. As people face climate displacement, as they have to leave ancestral homes or give up their islands. As they face, the cultural and spiritual impacts of climate change are deeply important, is what our Pacific partners are telling us. And so we need to make sure that those effects are really accounted for in what the world is doing in loss and damage, and that they're not just waved off and as insignificant things because they're not directly, you can't put a direct dollar value on them.
Yes, it's been somewhat since 1992 when the principle of common but differentiated, you know, principles around this financing. It's been a bit of a thorny issue. It's been something that's climate financing have really haven't got a good track record from. We're talking now about a proposed new loss and damage fund, but there really hasn't been a great level of contribution from the wealthier nations to the previous funds, the Green Fund and the like. I mean, what's your hope going into this one that, number one, that we actually just overall get people to follow through on the commitments from wealthier nations to provide that finance for developing nations?
Well, that was the message with we went to with our young Pacific climate leaders and with Reverend James Bhagwan, the head of the Pacific Conference of Churches, in to meet with Minister Chris Bowen. And we said, look, Australia wants to be a member of the Pacific family. We've got a new relationship with the Pacific, but we need that to be followed up with deeds, not just words. And that means taking action on the new loss and damage fund, being one of the first. We need to be leading to commit funds to that new mechanism to show the world that we've got confidence in it, that it's going to be, we see the importance of it for our Pacific neighbours. And that we're going to help make sure that it's an effective and fully functioning fund.
We've kind of launched into this discussion of loss and damage fund and all these types of technical terms where maybe a general audience may not understand that. It's, if we just give a layman's understanding, why do you think that's been such a barrier to try and deal with this climate financing issue? This sense of fairness and equity around, it doesn't matter whether you take 1992 or whichever year, who is a developing nation to resolve this issue?
Look, we know that there is a general acceptance throughout the world that climate emitters, the people who have historically put out the major amounts of carbon, should bear some responsibility to deal with the effects of those emissions on the countries that are the most vulnerable. And that's what a loss and damage fund does. It provides funding for the major impacts of climate change when things can't be mitigated or adapted, when infrastructure is knocked out, when roads or telecommunications towers are destroyed, or when other things, people have to make fundamental changes in their life, like moving to new areas, abandoning their homes. Those kind of big ticket loss and damage items are what the fund will deal with.
Yeah, and why do you think it's been something that we really haven't been able to resolve in, 30 years?
Well, it's been a battle to make sure that those emitters take responsibility. There's just been a reluctance to admit that there is that responsibility among the developed world to the global south. And it's only as the impacts on the global south, on the most vulnerable countries, have really started to show up in recent years, as cyclones have increased, as salination has ripped through islands, you've seen the massive floods in Western Asia. It's really come home to make people understand the immediacy of the need for this.
The news that the Pope won't be in attendance at COP28, how do you react to that? Is that a setback?
We all feel intense sadness at Pope Francis's illness and the fact that he can't be there. And, we pray, our thoughts and our prayers are with him for a speedy recovery. We know what a strong statements he's made, what a strong climate warrior he's been to try to get the global community moving on emissions reduction and on responding to climate change. And he's just put out a most recent encyclical only a few weeks ago, just in the lead up to COP. So we know that he was going to have this great convening power, bringing people together, bringing different faiths together, bringing people together from around the world to have a really strong voice and a strong presence at COP. And we'll all have to work harder and we'll work with all those people that he's been getting together with the Holy See and with other groups to have that impact and to continue that work that he was planning.
And you mentioned you met with the climate minister, Chris Bowen, earlier this week. I mean, he's also been making statements, giving speeches, saying that he is really keen for the Australian government to be advocating for, developed nations to be contributing from a broad base, is the words that he used, to a proposed loss and damage fund. He wants the ambition on climate renewables and, efficiency of energy sources to be tripled, to be doubled. I mean, how did you feel at the end of that meeting and what do you make of the Australian government, how they're responding heading into this COP28?
Look, Minister Bowen has a really big responsibility on his shoulders, and it's great that he is showing leadership in this. but he needs to be delivering for the Pacific. It's true that at the moment there are no guarantees about the scale of the loss and damage fund. And when you think that the estimates of the sort of loss and damage that is currently happening from climate change amount to about $400 billion a year, you realise that having a fund that it doesn't have significant commitments from all major developed nations and from a broad base of donors, it's just not going to have a tiny scratch on the on its impact on actually meeting the needs of people. So we'll keep pushing the Australian government and Minister Bowen to live up to that responsibility that they've taken on. And we're looking forward to working together with him. And it's really important that he puts in place that sort of contact and those structures that ensure that the Pacific, he's talking to the Pacific and that he's got representation from the Pacific on all these major decisions as he's moving forward on them.
As you say, a lot of the details will be the subject of this COP28, but economists are throwing out there like $1 trillion is the ballpark of what, you know, a loss and damage fund should be at. What are your thoughts on the quantum of what kind of range we're looking at here, what we need?
Well, I think these, you know, $400 billion or $1 trillion, they're indicative of just how deeply serious and widespread the impact of climate change is, and it makes it just laughable that people might not be taking this seriously and might still be trying to engineer, you know, oil deals at COPs rather than actually deal with the billions and billions of dollars in damage that is being caused right now and that is only going to expand in the years to come. So it's a huge wake up call. And at the moment, you know, this damage is being borne by the world's most vulnerable. It's being caused by emitters who've made massive profits, and they're not paying the price for it. The price is being paid by least developed countries, by climate vulnerable countries, and in our enabled by the Pacific. And that's deeply unjust.
A lot of people do feel a sense of helplessness at the scale of climate change and what can a little person like me do? I mean, how are you feeling heading into this kind of emotionally? You know, sometimes it's really hard because you're like, oh, there's so many stakeholders here. We can't get the expectation too high. But how are you feeling?
I'm hopeful. We're going to this COP with hopes that we'll see, you know, further change and further momentum. And if Australia is going to hold the Pacific, a COP with the Pacific in a couple of years' time, you know, we really need to see the Australian government making moves and not just pursuing business as usual at this COP. So we've got a lot of hope in the Albanese government and in Minister Bowen, but they really need to live up to what they've promised.